Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and we got news cucked so hard we had to can the last episode.
So. Yeah, it was brutal. Yeah, it was all premised on like what's Israel gonna do?
Yeah, they could do this. They could do that.
And it was funny how they just actually in the moment, especially at first, it really seemed like it was quite. It seemed more substantial than it ended up being by a, like by the end of it, I was just fucking laughing. I was like, this is fucking retarded.
The beginning was just like bad info. It was like there were three explosions in
Isfahan,
and like, oh shit, like the thing was they already happened. It was like the Watchmen, like, you know, like it wasn't like the missiles are on the way. It's like the missiles hit half an hour ago, you know, like,
right.
Oh fuck, like
it's over before it began. It's the first.
What could have done this?
It seemed like it might have. To begin with, the indication to begin with was that this was just the beginning and that there was going to be more, possibly quite a bit.
It was like, how did this happen? What was the mechanism? And then now it's, you know.
Well, I just feel completely validated in my takeaway from the day of, the night of. Which was, this just makes them look absolutely retarded and incompetent on the world stage. Everybody's laughing at them. And they're like, okay, they have some brutal copes that just keep getting BTFO'd.
They claimed the attack even, like the government?
I don't think... So what I saw was that the Iranians have... the telegram thing for whatever it was, which is, I think, purporting to be derived ultimately from some official Iranian source, who knows, but... it certainly tracks with what I would expect, which is, first of all, yes, the Israeli government has not officially claimed responsibility, and then the other thing...
But neither has, like, the mech, so...
Correct. Nobody's touching this.
Yeah.
And then, between that and just the total lack of damage or any kind of anything, Iran was like, okay, you failed, there's a new status quo... Like, this is not worth responding to. We just sort of give it more than it deserves. Fine. There's a new world order. There really is. It's a new security landscape for the Middle East as of whatever it was 10 days ago.
So now to get into it, what do you think happened? Because the Iranian narrative I don't like, which is that this was a mission where they took out the early warning radar in Syria, which did happen.
They did take out an early warning radar in Syria. Yes,
That happened for sure.
That was almost contemporary. It was maybe 5 minutes before the news of the strike on Isfahan or whatever, the explosions in Isfahan.
Well, it didn't happen apparently.
There were explosions. It was
like in the air,
not on the ground.
Yeah,
that's right.
Ground.
Yeah.
So the Iranian narrative is that happened. There was a single F-35 with three missiles. That was going to wait for the local quadcopter drones to damage some kind of like the local radar defense system, and then it fired those. The drones were intercepted before the net could be degraded, and those three were shot down or canceled. The mission was canceled, and they were fired early. Like, the Iranians aren't clear.
It's not clear. Yeah, I mean,
with the Iranian narrative on the F-35 being in the story is. I don't really even like it. I don't know
that there was any F-35. I actually...
That's the almost official Iranian narrative right now. Is it like,
no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yes, I agree. When there was... As the events were unfolding, it was not immediately clear... It wasn't actually... Like, at first, when the news broke after maybe 2-3 hours that it was drones, I didn't believe it. And I don't think anybody in MapChat believed it. It was sort of like...
Yeah.
We were like...
My first instinct was, oh, because it was already happened. These happened already. It was it was a F-35 doing a short range. Like,
yes. Well, you were on F-30. You were F-35 gang.
Because like, if an occlusion had already happened, missiles are very easy to track, right? They're loud, and like, there's flame shooting out of their ass. Like, you're gonna see that on a radar, right? And like, well, if it just blew up, then it's some kind of stealth aircraft, right?
If there was if there were missiles blowing up on an Iranian military base in central Iran, that the first, like, everybody kind of just assumed that it was missiles, and that was the only story that made sense at first, really. And which meant, yes, if there are missiles being delivered in central Iran, the only way that could have possibly happened was through some kind of stealth aircraft. Now, I immediately was pressing X to doubt this whole story. Yeah. I was like, yes, if there was a successful missile strike, it would have had to have been something like that. But what makes, do we have any confirmation that there were even missiles? We did. I kept looking for it. I couldn't find it.
And then the American Pentagon, or the NBC,
ABC, whatever. Yes. An American military source told ABC News that it had been missiles. Yeah. And that's when I was like, whoa, like, what the fuck just happened? Yeah. And then I was like, okay, so now we have the quadcopter story came out, and the whole thing seemed pretty much like the most anti-Semitic nothing burger, just kind of like just total Jew failure.
Well, then
failure.
Footage of gun AA came out. So gun anti-aircraft fire, yes. Very short range, right? And
yeah, but so are quadcopters.
Yeah, no, but before then it was like, well, what are they shooting gun AA?
Oh, at, yeah, right. I see what you're saying. Yes.
Like, what the, like.
Right. Yeah, how did you get that? You know, so then it sort of, then the drone picture started cohering, at which point, what do you need F-35s for? It's like, why would there, at what point would have an F-35 have been relevant? I did see, the only thing that sort of speaks maybe to the F-35 involvement was these I don't know if they're booster stages or what you call them. Essentially, they're booster stages. I don't know,
fuselage parts or whatever.
Whatever it is, some element of the like air to ground missiles or some kind of missile. I don't even know if it was air to ground. Actually, I mean they were claiming, but who knows? Yes, there were some missile casings found in Iraq that presumably would have been launched by some kind of strike fighter. Possibly an F-35, although I don't think that's been confirmed. The weird kind of side note on all this, and the main reason why, actually, I mean, this is sort of old hat, but there is news about it, is the Pepe Escobar thing. Did you see this?
I saw it was, I read it for a second, and I was like, that's retarded. And then I saw somebody I thought was smarter than me say, that's retarded. Like, okay, yeah.
So for those of you who may not be like this plugged in, the Pepe Escobar, who's kind of a, I don't know.
Zero hedge tier kind of guy.
Yes, very good way to put it. I was like, how the fuck, zero hedge tier is perfect. He comes out with this story, and he like really builds it up, and he's not like he's not like the greatest journalist or anything, but he has tended in the past to refrain from making completely pants on head retarded kind of claims, which this is pants on head retarded. But anyway, he claims to have a source high up in some Asian government that revealed to him that a single Israeli piloted F-35 launched a nuke, or I don't know if it even got to the launch, but it went up with a nuclear weapon that it was intending to detonate over Iran as an EMP attack, and somehow a Russian jet shot it down, preventing World War III or something. This is...
That's dumber than I remember. I read, like, the headline, like, that's fucking retarded. And they're like, this is dumber.
This is... No, it's extremely retarded. And So I have a favorite Twitter anime profile pic, Schizo, Cernosad. I'm sure some of you are probably following him. Who, like, as a Schizo with an anime profile pic, like, there's just takes and stuff that I... just kind of have to step over on occasion, but he's pretty anti-Semitic and pretty smart and very much on top of both the Ukraine and the Israel situations. And I mean, his thing is like they're Khazars, and I was like, okay, fine. I mean, whatever. I'm not going to like argue with you about that. Khazar Satanists, you know, okay, fine. But no, he was saying basically, like, he was pointing out all the problems with this story, and also,
well, it's the opening to the Tom Clancy hit, the Sunball Fears.
Is that the,
yes?
I didn't even know that.
As the F-16 gets,
I actually never saw it. Yeah,
there's like, it's like a, it's, I don't know if they put it, he puts it in like, I don't know, sixth, one of these interminable conflicts in the mid century, between the Arabs, and it's like an F-16 or an F-15 gets like a nuclear armed missile, and then the,
like, isn't that Broken Arrow?
No, this is Sunball Fears. Is the, oh, so this is the, this is, so there's like, tensions are high, and they equip the Israel behind the scenes equips the fleet of like nuclear armed aircraft, and then like, it just, like, tensions decrease, but they need those aircraft for a conventional sortie, and one of the aircraft, one of the missiles, like, stays on the strike fighter, and it's a nuclear missile, incorrectly, like, as a mistake, and then it gets shot down fighting the Jordanians or whatever, and then like,
those Muslim terrorists, ragheads,
so much fucking stupider. This is pre 9/11.
Tom Clancy. Oh no.
So like, I believe they're like,
and this wasn't a Tom Clancy novel, right?
No, this is a Tom Clancy.
This is a Tom Clancy.
This is the beginning of Sunball Fears. And then it's recovered like in the 90s by a terror cell that like believes in terrorism. You know, like that ideology that we all follow.
Yeah, you know. generic terrorism. Haven't you heard of it?
And they use Pakistani like engineers to, this is pre-Pakistani nuclear weapons, I think. It was like, they use Pakistani engineers to create a nuclear, take the fissile material from this bomb and repackage it, and then blow it off at the Super Bowl in Colorado. And it's very famous, you know, Tom Clancy. But this is like,
yeah, I remember. I've seen you know, memes and stuff. I've just never sat through the movie. Yeah, no, it's basically,
the movie makes it less dumb.
Well, this story is completely retarded. I mean, again,
it's Native American terrorists. It's really fucking dumb.
Native American terror. Wow.
It's really fucking dumb.
Yeah, I guess if you're like a boomer who's really ass hurt about the AIM.
Aligned with like
the American Indian
Muslim
movement.
Somehow. It's very, it's,
yeah.
Early Tom Clancy is, it's weird.
Well, at least that's like, you know, that's a Tom Cruise movie or whatever.
Harrison Ford, I think, actually.
Is it? What, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah. That's, like, this is not ostensibly serious journalism that, you know, that you're staking your credibility as a quote-unquote dissident reporter or whatever on, you know, part of the have you seen as the resist, they call themselves the resistance axis, which is not bad. I mean, it has a certain,
that's
a
Iranian, it's an Iranian term.
Oh, is that a,
yeah,
is that
I saw some leftoids like seething over it, like, we get like we
no
to,
we're the resistance, we resist.
No, like tankies, they're like, this is like bad optics, bro, like, they're gonna think you're Nazis. And it was like, this is like, because they're Palestinian.
Why would that
pro Palestinian? They don't want to be associated with like the being called the Axis, because they're like tankies. They're all like fascism bad, right? And the Republicans like, listen, like, it's an Iranian government line. Like, you're not gonna, they do more for the Palestinians than you do. Sorry, you gotta deal with them calling it the Axis. Like,
yeah, that's funny. Well, it is a resistance axis, right? I mean it's a fairly straightforward. But anyway, it's just funny to me because like it's very I don't know if the Iranians intended it that way or if it hits that way for them. To me, it's just straight boomer like Star Wars versus the Empire type bullshit like self conception.
Oh god, I forgot the end of this. Sorry, I got to give you the end of Sunball Fears. So the American president, they get the kid, there's like some kind of Muslim connection, but like all they know is that it's a Muslim group associated with the Native Americans, and they send like a nuclear armed bomber to blow up Tehran, like. Not Iran, but it's clearly Iran, even though they have nothing to do with it. And like the heroes like get to the president and like invoke article whatever and like turn the bomber around. Sorry, I did. I remember like it was like America, they were gonna do, because it was post Cold War, they were gonna get the decapitation strike on the Russian nuclear fleet and then like also bomb Tehran. It was really, god, what a, sorry.
Yeah,
the Cold War ending really fucked that guy up for like 10 years, sorry.
Yeah, well, you just, what do you do? Like, yeah, there was that there's no political, how do you do international geopolitical thrillers between the fall of the Soviet Union and 9/11? Like, there's just, What was that other Harrison Ford movie with these? The president is on a plane. It's like some Serbian.
Air Force One.
Air Force One. That shit was awesome. I mean, it was completely fucking retarded, but it was great.
That grand decade of Serbs, South Africans, and Irish people.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, it's the IRA. It's like, oh, we can pretend they like give a shit about what's happening.
We talked about this in our Harry Potter episode, but that's the same thing with what's her face? J.K. Rowling was like super ass mad at the IRA for like you're fucking up British, you know, liberalism or something. And the Death Eaters were modeled on them before,
or something. Doing a lot of heavy lifting in that,
a lot of what?
Like heavy lifting in that statement. Like, what are they? Like, even how does the IRA is like not ruining British society? Like, it's like a weird like.
Oh no, but obviously not. But I'm just saying, like, this is, you know, for the British libtard in the 90s, they were right.
Yeah, like I guess
this is the great. This is the big threat or the thing that we get agitated about. Anyway, yeah. So there were a lot of things about that story with the story that Pepe Escobar told was this Russian jet shot down this lone Israeli jet that would never. Part of what Cerno was saying was that not Cernovich, this again,
unescorted nuclear armed manned aircraft,
right? Exactly.
Short range, by the way. The F-35 is very short range for
across somebody's airspace and all this kind of stuff. But he immediately sniffed out, which I would not have necessarily, but I think he's completely right. He's like, you got played by the Jews. I don't know who your source is or says they are or says they got their information from, but this is a story from Israel or some Israeli asset.
From an email you got an email saying, highly ranked intelligence service in Pakistan, and I know. It's like, no, you're not.
It's like you're a Jew trying to make the Jews look less retarded for this just completely retarded shit they tried to pull. It's the funny.
Not even like an Israeli story. Like probably a Jew thought of that. And just
could
like,
you be some random?
I'm going to email the Pepe Escobar.
But what's the line? You know, between like all Jews at some level. They're just intelligence assets of the Jewish Borg.
It was literally Laura Loomer.
Exactly. But it's come. There were some. It was funny. Like the so I was trying to pay very close attention to how this was getting played in the American media. There was a spectrum. There would the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and CNN were like somewhere on the lines, somewhere around like there were reports of damage that could not be confirmed. There was one just I was kind of floored. Report from I think NBC that just asserted, on the basis of some U.S. official saying so, I guess, that targets were hit in Iran. And that was the line by this the Jewish press was, oh, yeah, we hit Iran back hard. We showed we could do – there was, again, this kind of total inversion of reality. Like, we showed we could hit them whenever, wherever. So, you know, mission accomplished.
Like, we have our own proxies. Something like we have our own proxies kind of stuff.
Exactly. So
– but also, like, you can't do that when no one claims credit for it.
Yeah, well, like, Iran was like, yeah, we fucking did. I mean, you could see the missile launches, obviously, but there was no question as to who was responsible for that strike. Israel couldn't really. Just to wrap that side of things up, I don't know what to make of the missile casings that were found. I'm skeptical that an F-35 shot ordnance from outside Iran into Iran.
Well, there was no
it's
Iranian.
Possible.
The Iranian said we had no missiles.
I don't think. There were
no interception missiles going up, right? So, like in theory.
Yeah, like how do that work? What I suspect happened is if there was an F-35 or whatever, some kind of strike fighter that was involved, went up over Iraq, didn't like what it saw. Bailed. With or without. Maybe blind firing ordnance or something. I don't know. Or, you know, jettisoning or I don't know exactly. Maybe not even. I don't know. I don't know what to make of the missile casings. It's a loose end. But I think it's pretty clear there were no, just zero penetration of the Iranian air defense net by Israel at any point ever, which is the real takeaway here. Like, that's the actual bottom line is as I say, I think I said on the live stream when we were, you know, recording as this was unfolding, it is a thing you can do. There have been cases where Ukrainian sabotage and reconnaissance groups have gone behind Russian lines or whatever, just activated cells in whatever, you know, rear area, gotten dudes with quadcopters, you know, a mile, not even, from an airbase and slammed aircraft on the runway. That's a thing you can do. It's happened at least twice that I can think of, and that's just what I saw, right? And we don't know. I mean, typically these things are, you know, they like to brag about it. So I can remember at least two, maybe a third instance. But then I also remember cases where it didn't work because, you know, it's are you napping? It's like, did I catch you napping? And if you were napping, then your aircraft can get blown up on the runway by short range quadcopters piloted by local, solid kike. But if, you know, solid kike didn't get through the tunnel this time or whatever, it didn't work out. So the short range AD did its job. Long range AD did its job. Medium range AD did its, like, at no point was there any weakness exploited.
I've been creating another theory of what happened that day.
Yeah.
And I also can't address the missiles they found in Iraq, but maybe.
Well, they didn't find missiles. They found, like, empty
boosters, I guess. Yeah. But, like, it kind of does. I can maybe address them. So my theory is it was just a Thursday night, right? So, like, a Syrian target got blown up by the Israelis.
I mean, it could have been missile... that could have been where they shot at the Syrian early warning radar from, right?
Or some other targets in Iraq. Iran got targets in Iraq.
And Lebanon also got blown up, so yes. Who knows what they were shooting
at. It was just a Thursday night, which means the Jews are hitting the three countries they can just allowed to hit, right? And then the mech... as retarded independent operators. Also, it was apparently like Mech Day, where they had, like,
oh yeah, it was their anniversary and the Ayatollah's birthday.
Yes. So, like, it's possible that, like, this quadcopter attack just happened to coincide with, like, the Jews taking out some targets and, like, we're doing some aberrant salience here. But everyone's actually but all factions are okay with this because, like, the Jews also didn't want to keep escalating tit for tat forever. So, like,
I have a hard time. The part of that I don't like, I have no trouble believing it was mech. Probably it was mech because I don't think Mossad guys are running around Isfahan. It's just not very feasible. What is feasible is they have local assets, local, you know, cells that they can activate, and that's going to be either the mech or what's the other? There's another one isn't there another one? There's, like, one other one, no?
There's the other faction, but they don't have any cells. There's the monarchists. They don't have any faction.
They don't have any dudes, like, running around?
I
don't know if the mech has dudes. I mean,
oh, you're thinking of the Baluchs.
Yes.
The Baluchs.
Yes.
Oh, the drone's kind of advanced technology.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they kind of, so let's say it was the mech or mech equivalent, right? I just think they were activated. It's not, I don't think it was them operating independently because I think Israel they've been talking. That's the thing. That's the kind of big picture strategic bind that they're in is Iran forced their hand and Israel, like, the smart thing to do would have, yes, been to just sort of say, like, yes, well, you know, unfortunately, we can't do anything about, like, Iran is just a power and they're here to stay and we need to work within the confines of that reality, that's just like there's no faction in Israel that's just not a part of their domestic political discourse. So, and of course, meanwhile, you have just the insane lunatic red heifer people screaming for blood. So the coalition is just extremely unstable. The political dynamics are very, like, Netanyahu is in a very tough situation domestically, and they needed to do something, anything. And this was what they came up with, and it's fucking dumb. And I mean, I guess if it had worked, if they had caught
this
Iranian
is why I
snapping,
didn't like the quadcopter story, because, like, the initial story wasn't even on this airbase; it was on, like, buildings, like research buildings, which is like
it was like nuclear research buildings. That's
like,
right. Or
that
something
was
like that.
Why would that even do anything? Like a quadcopter hitting a building is gonna, like, chip the paint, break the windows.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm sort of filling in the gaps.
It was at the airbase. Yeah.
It was at the airbase, so I'm just assuming they were looking for aircraft on the ground, but who knows?
Yeah.
That would have been... This is sort of like attributing to them more intelligence than they seem to actually have.
Or
the
Iranian narrative, they were trying to hitting air defenses.
Yeah, that was the other... So that was the... Yes. So the maybe like last little bit of this is a kind of a post-mortem, after-action report. The COPE, the last COPE, the only because the shit about like pretty much everything disappeared from Western news except for kind of very vague claims of damage done to air defense radar at the Isfahan airbase. There was about a 24-hour period where like did you see this extremely grainy synthetic aperture it understand it, the main cameras of the satellites. It was sort of like pieced together from the edges of the field of vision of multiple satellites. So it's not even, it's just an extremely grainy, terrible picture that they were like, you could see, it was like QAnon shit. It was like, you could see where the fragments,
the initial photo is kind of like a gray splotch, right? That's the radar, which I was taking their word for. I'm not a photo analyst outside of one small part of Poland, which I've looked into pretty heavily. but I'm generally kind of have to take their word for it to some degree. Like, this gray splotch is a radar of some kind, right? And there was a black splotch on the other picture. And I was like, you fucking me. I kind of let the photo guys do their thing because, like, both sides have those guys come out of the woodwork, but like it went from a splotch to a different colored splotch, and like probably not. Like, you know, like that would be a big explosion, right? Like that if there was a radar there and it or something and it blew the fuck up to create a big like burned mark on the area. There probably would have been footage of that or something.
Like, right? Something.
Because the Iranians don't have that like Ukraine thing where they like shut down all footage. Like, you were getting footage of like, this is me and I'm by the nuclear research facility. This is me by the...
Right.
Looking at the sky. Look, there's a tracer. There's a tracer in the air like going like...
Yeah.
At something, you know.
No, that's right. And then, of course, inevitably, whatever it was, 72, not even 72 hours later, you had high resolution before and after photographs, and the last kind of showing no damage, and the last COPE was like, oh, you see the air defense systems were missing. They had been there before, but then they're missing. Like, yeah, no shit, asshole. Like, did you not see that? Like, there was footage of the Iranian,
the last 2 years of the Ukraine war. You moved that shit,
and you saw footage of it moving during the time. You saw them moving down the highway, like as this attack was unfolding.
I heard that footage was old, actually. Of them,
it could be. I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah, they moved their.
But obviously, they moved their air defense. Like, because yes, it's this known static position. Yeah. You have an air alert. Like, the first thing you do is move it.
Also, it's just like Soviet doctrine is just like you're always moving that shit around because like.
And then, of course, you know. Again, now we have photos of more recent photos showing exactly that equipment right back at its normal static position. It's like, okay, so
now Brozent has been taking fucking L's.
Yeah,
it's been a bad 3 weeks for Brozent. If we want to shift to Ukraine L's.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
The Russians built this very stupid looking, it looks like a corrugated shed over a tank. It does look dumb.
The COPE, it's like, what is it? It's a cuck shed. We've evolved from the COPE cage to the cuck shed.
Yes. They had done like something comparable to this a while ago. It didn't work very well, or it got broken down or something like that. But the corrugated, like, the house around this tank will trigger your FPV drones and your ATGMs, and is, like, great against artillery and things like that.
Well, I think my understanding is they also have a whole EW suite.
Yes,
underneath.
Also,
on
top. On top.
On top, whatever.
Better footage that came out, it's on top. And they were, like, memeing on it for, like, 3 days. And then the footage was, like, oh, this like suburb was like single-handedly taken by the fucking
right. They just went. They rolled up, deposited a bunch of dudes.
There's like two. There's video of, like two like FPV drones like hitting it, and it's like, it's a fucking house.
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah,
yeah. Or one misses, kind of.
Probably whatever. Maybe. Still,
but it's like,
yeah, because it's a house.
Yeah, like, it's like the little area. Like the next day was like UAVs is like, sorry.
I guess the next step is you have to design. ordnance that'll penetrate one thin layer.
Already done. Cornet, okay. The Cornet, there's like dual launch ATGMs.
Yeah.
The Russians already have them in the... They actually got used by Hezbollah.
Nice!
Like, I want to say, in the previous like scuffle, like in 2001, there was a, it was just in the internal border scuffles. But yeah, no, it's you fire... The trick is, because it was done actually to the trophy systems, you know? Where it, you know, just,
yeah.
It's a, well, you just fire one right after the other, mm-hmm. and they hit the same spot, so... It's a solved problem, but like no one has them yet. You know, it's one of those like
it's very well. It's just,
not it's a production yeah. problem, not an engineering problem,
right?
Or
I mean, kind of whatever. Like, yeah, well, it's just a new. I mean,
you gotta.
This is the first time drones have really. This is you know, the first social media war, the first drone war, and just industrial production capacity hasn't caught up with.
It's easier to build corrugated shit than it is to build, build like a dual ATGM,
right?
And then,
yeah, and then at a certain point, maybe the incentives flipped. You're like, well, if they have all this, like, first of all, maybe if you don't, if, you know, for if you don't have a cope cage or a cuck shed on top of you, then maybe those rounds aren't as effective. And even if they are, maybe you know the economics could work out to, you know, there's all kinds of. We'll see how this evolves. Yeah. It's definitely.
Well, I think with the ATGMs is that like in theory, maybe we don't know. They're always it's been in the works for a long time. No one knows how effective it is yet because it hasn't been tested. Is like instead of these kinetic stops where it's something stopping the projectile, what if we can like do EW stuff and like jam it, turn it off, push it away?
Yeah,
and like that could you know that could come out. Yeah. Be more effective or less, or, you know.
Although they, I think the I'm sure you could. Well, I'm not sure. You could probably. I can imagine ways in which you could work around it. But there's enough.
We have to go back to fly by wire.
Well, I was going to say if you just have a solid wire connecting you to the drone, that's a lot harder to fuck with, right? Yeah. So
there's ways. There's talk of like smokes and stuff and reflectors because currently they're out there fly by laser, right? It's fly by wire but with a laser that's pushing info, which is basically like. 95% the same to the end user. Flybar is still around with tow missiles, though, I believe.
Yes.
But the thing is, you can, in theory, you'll be forced to go back to fly-by-wire or fly-by-wire manual, which is like the Malyuka, which is super fucking old.
Or just have it be autonomous with AI, which is you know dangerous in certain ways, maybe.
But also, like then the same things will fuck with it. Like if you put it in a cloud of smoke...
Well, yes, I mean, if you get in between the control, like it takes away the defender's ability, like you getting between you and the controller, getting between the drone and the controller is no longer effective. But yes, other stuff will still be.
Yeah, but so we'll see. But apparently, it works really well. Like one thing that Defense Politics Asia pointed out.
Defense Politics Asia
pointed out that like. The current, he was like basically, he's kind of giving his best guess, but he's like, these like little suburbs, because these little suburbs and tree lines have been falling like crazy for the last 3 weeks. Like every day there's.
Yeah, we have, this is our, well, this is good. We can do our debate on this, but yeah, sorry, go on.
But he was saying basically that these things are being held by two squads to a platoon of Ukrainians, and they're being attacked by a company to a battalion of Russians, right?
They're also getting fabbed on nonstop.
Yeah, but just, they're just like they're just not going to hold if the Russians are doing determined assaults. It's just like you know, not much they can actually do. You're just.
I'll hold it for the yes. Yeah, keep going.
But the other thing is that like they can do this forever. Like the current rate of advance is still very slow on the map. Like,
all right. Oh, sorry. I mean, in objective terms, yes, but.
I was promised after Avdiivka fell. It was a straight line.
It is. That's what. No, I think you're seeing that. Like that's like thing number one to say is these are just not. I think there's several issues. So first of all, there is some elevation and there are some. I mean, it's not quite as flat as else. You know, in the floodplains of the Dnieper, like further closer there, but it's. It's overall not super. It's getting flatter and flatter the further west you go, essentially. And yes, there are no. I mean, there are differently sized agglomerations of physical structures, but none of them are particularly substantial. Past like the one they're up against right now that is substantial, both because it's larger and because it's more heavily fortified, is Chasiv Yar. And then there's Konstantinovka, and then there's a couple others, but the next real big objective is Pokrovsk, and I like even Pokrovsk is not that big. It's just they've had forward HQs there for a while. It's been fortified more so than other areas, but it's I don't whatever. Point being, I think part of the reason why, like, although in yes, strictly objective terms, you know, meters per day or whatever, they're not moving that fast. It's been faster and it's been accelerating. We are no like the average pace, the velocity, let's say, rather than the acceleration, has increased because it's accelerating since last Bakhmut, since first Bakhmut and the last Bakhmut of Avdiivka. And I do think that it's a little early to be talking about a collapse, but I think the Ukrainian rear is in shambles. They don't have the manpower. They don't have the equipment. They may solve for some of the, but probably, I think this bill has about a quarter of what they need. The bill that just passed in terms of like the actual military equipment that they're being given by the United States.
The Russian shills that are like the smarter ones have been saying like the bill doesn't matter. Like they were, at no point were they not sending everything.
Yeah.
Everything coming off the production line in terms of shells, attackums, whatever was being sent. Like, there was no delay.
Exactly. I think it's really what I think the bill is. I mean, there's no, obviously this is speculative, but I just think it's essentially putting black ink underneath contracts that were already effectively in force.
Also, it's creating a slush fund that, like, hey, like, at a certain point, it's like $40 billion is just going to, like, be spent in America. So, like, any.
So, on whatever.
The next 30 years. That's a lot more than previous years.
Yeah, it's a big chunk of change, even for the American government, but it's just not going to translate. Like, I think there's basically two scenarios. There's really two possibilities to bracket this issue. The first is that Ukraine is already being supplied with whatever the Americans can scrounge on a monthly basis. And some of that is probably illegal by the letter of the law, but there was an understanding like, yeah, we're giving you these shells on an understanding that like the budget for it and the legality of the transfer or whatever other equipment.
It's not going to be looked into, so it doesn't matter.
So it's going to happen.
Seymour Hersh will write out in 5 years and no one will give a shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Or
he'll be shot or whatever for doing that. But. Probably not yet.
No, nobody cares that much. No, what I was going to say, the other horn of that dilemma is they're not getting that, and so there will actually be a qualitative change in the amount of military aid and equipment that they're receiving, but that's going to take time. Like assuming there isn't actually already just a direct pipeline, then okay, all that shit has to be sent over. You know, even if it's staged already in Poland or Romania or whatever, like. The Russians have been targeting bus and train stations. The Ukrainian logistics are in shambles. Their energy capacity is down to about half at most of what it was on the outbreak of the war. Like they can't. And then there's logistical and distribution problems. There's, you know, the big thing and maybe the main source of my disagreement with you on the overall strategic picture is we are seeing now multiple garrisons route. We saw in particular the 47th Mechanized Brigade that had been essentially I believe they've been on the contact line since hostilities broke out. So that's 2 years essentially uninterrupted. Finally, they were being sent to the rear for some rest and relaxation and rotation. And then before they even got to the rear, they were turned around and told to occupy position to no, sorry, you're not doing that. And I just think, I mean, we've seen more mass surrenders. Okay, we haven't seen anything above about a platoon. Well, I guess there was the remnants of a company that was, you know, but that's the other thing. It's like, okay, to your point about these are three farmhouses being occupied by like, yeah, a squad or two that are being attacked by a company or two. Okay, but that's it. Like, I think part of the issue there is that squad is a company on paper. That platoon is a company on paper. So I just don't like the overall picture that emerges is they just literally don't have the manpower to continue to man these positions. And then when you combine that with, I don't know if they're, I think it's probably a psych out, although who knows. But they've been making very, very loud noises about Kharkov recently, and they just blew up the television tower, you know, in dramatic fashion. and they've been, you know, accumulating men and resources. There was reports that they were sending sappers out to clear minefields between the Russian border and Kharkov. So, and I think if the Ukrainians do actually go as all in as they would need to prevent the pace of Russian advance from accelerating, they can prevent it from accelerating if they essentially leave Kharkov out to twist in the wind. Even if they got tomorrow all of the American aid that was promised, they would need an additional 500,000 guys, and even then I don't know that they could in the abstract, right? But no, they can't defend these two places at once. They can't even defend. I don't even know that the Kharkov thing even really matters, but certainly with that in play, I would expect the pace of the Russian advance to accelerate, possibly even quite considerably. I think they're going to have to fall back to, I forget the name of the river. It's the next river, and then the river after that is the Dnieper, and between those two rivers is basically just flat farmland. And there's some, like, that's the thing is in Chasiv Yar and places like that, I think you get, the well-known effect in urban areas when there's a point of, like, when you've demolished enough of an urban area where it actually benefits the defenders. Like, yes, they're getting bombed or whatever, but, you know, like Gaza play, you know, the ruined hellscape of Gaza really plays to Hamas's advantages in certain ways. You never, any corner could be, any, you just don't know, you have no idea. But when it's like three farmhouses, you don't get that effect. Like, it's just, there's just a couple buildings and you know, a corner store. Like, it just doesn't provide that kind of opportunity for the defenders.
If I could kind of slide.
I'm done.
So, there are those, like, whatever, clusters of dachas or gas stations. There is one of those every kilometer.
But that's just not an impediment, is all I'm saying.
But
not,
it is, because it clearly is, because we're seeing it be an impediment, right? Like, we're seeing, like, in theory, if you have a tank brigade, they should just, like, walk over those, not even notice it, right? They're clearly noticing them and, like, dealing and, like, announcing it.
They're just being careful. The thing is, those kind of little areas like that, I mean, you had a couple of those up in the, now granted, it's different terrain. In the forest near Kharkov, whoever the Ukrainian commander is in charge of that sector should have, like, he should be in charge of the whole effort at this point, frankly. Done a masterful job of defending those little pissant towns from the Russian army. Again, the terrain up there works more in the defenders' favor than the kind of relatively open plains in the south. But still, it's doable. It's just not being done. And I think this will be interesting. It'll be, you know, we'll have to check in a couple weeks or a month or two. The other thing, of course, is the summer is going to, you know, it's fighting time soon. It's fighting season in the Ukraine, as we do for thousands of years. And Russia's clearly gearing up for something. So how that coincides, I don't know. But yeah, I think, of course, any building that's standing can house an ATGM that can wreck an armed vehicle's day or multiple such or whatever. Like, that's just a reality of modern warfare and needs to be dealt with. But I have a hard time believing that.
Well, I've watched some of these things get taken, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not being taken in, like, casualty light manners. It's like,
I think the most recent, the one that everyone is kind of, like myself included, is a little hyped about,
well,
like, Gerritino, is because it was taken. It was pretty much just abandoned.
Yeah.
Without much of a fight.
That's an apparition.
Well, it has been to date, but I mean.
They're doing stuff like the Shed tank, because the tradition has been, they have shifted. You have to expend things to take points.
Well, that's
obviously
just,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
The Russians have changed their, like, primary expenditure from men to, like, armored vehicles, right? But they're still, like, hauling ass with two tanks and six BMPs down a highway straight at shit. And sometimes they get beat back or get fucked up real bad. Like, they're not,
they're losing,
like,
engagements.
How does that look? If you say, okay, so a tank brigade should in theory run over these little points, right? But they're not. We're sending, like, individual efforts to, like, do their best. And sometimes they get through.
I think that's entirely on the Ukrainian artillery and drone capabilities.
Yes, which are not degraded at this point. Like,
Yeah. I mean, not... I mean,
they have enough FPV drones. They have enough artillery. Like, that's the thing a lot of people have been saying, no more artillery, right? The artillery will run out. No, there's enough. Like, you don't need as much artillery as you want, right? Historically, like...
Sure. Especially not when you have, you know...
When you're defending, yeah, even when, yeah, you're defending, right? So, like, if the Ukrainians can impose costs for every little village, or maybe every little village, or... Not even villages. These are fucking, like, you know, 8 buildings in a square. If every 8 buildings in a square, which there is one every kilometer, every tree line, is a fucking problem you have to solve, you can't solve that with the size of the Russian forces in Ukraine right now.
Yeah,
you need a million man army. You need divisions to run these things over.
And
they're fighting in battalions
still. Well, first of all, the first thing I would say to that is, you know, it seems they have at least a core group or two that they, an army corps that they're going to throw in an offensive action soon. Where and when precisely is, yeah, TBD. But I don't know about a million men. They certainly have 3-4 divisions that they can, if they want to push, which is at this point, I think, I mean, depending on how things go and exactly what happens. But if I'm, who's in charge now of the Reich? Is it Gerasimov? I forget who. Anyway, if I'm Gerasimov or whoever is in charge of the southern, the overall effort, the what I would do, you know, armchair general, is just continue exploiting these. Like, this is go. This is basically like maybe a little earlier than you would have liked, but you clearly have formations ready. You just push into Pokrovsk, and then you push from Pokrovsk to the Dnieper, because Pokrovsk is they set up there for a while. That's like that was the brain hub before. That was essentially their primary rear. It was their forward headquarters, but it was in the rear area for the whole front line, essentially running from now Chasov Yar all the way up. You know, just I guess to Slovyansk-ish. I mean, like it's a huge area that this command was covering, and I don't think that I think the FPV drone manufacturer, that's all underground. That's not going to be interdicted. That's just something that the Russian army is going to have to deal with until they take Kiev is, and then maybe even until they, you know, there's a final settlement and Lviv is ceded to Poland or whatever. They may just have to be dealt with underground FPV drone factories. Sure. That's not going to like stop. Yeah. 2-3 divisions just continuing to exploit these gaps, and I think that we're seeing the formation of gaps to be exploited. That's a change. That's a qualitative change that hasn't existed until now.
I think that's where we disagree. I think that's because I don't think these are gaps. You're just like a platoon falling back.
Yeah, but falling back to where?
Next gas station. Next 8 buildings in a fucking circle.
Yeah, but you don't have. They're not giving them time to dig in. Like,
we don't need to dig in that. Like, it's a building. Like. It's just strong points aren't necessarily, like, you don't need to be, not everything is going to be Bakhmut. It's going to be next, like, every tree line, every forest built. Like,
we'll see. I mean, it's a good question.
Effectively every time that they rush to send, like, you know, 6 BMPs and 2 tanks directly up the middle at one of these things, and the defenders just call in artillery and scoot, that's going to be like a massive, that's a massive.
Well, there are fewer and fewer places for the artillery to hide the further west you go.
I mean, it's moving and shooting. There's going to be a tree line that's going to be buildings. Like,
yeah.
The idea of, like, we're running out of... Things will not run out. Things do not run out. The famous, like, the German army had artillery towards the end. Like, you know, these are... Like, there are state functions happening. Like, Ukraine is a state. It is not going to fall apart. I think that's one thing I want to kind of talk about, actually. Is this conception of armies falling apart and collapsing is just like what happened once. It happened to Saddam, like, once. The invasion of Iraq, like, I think...
Oh.
Like, the...
Sure, yeah.
The Serbs during the NATO, say, the state stayed intact the entire time. Like, the idea of the state and army falling apart.
Oh, yeah, and I don't expect...
Is not actually
yes,
a thing
yes,
that has...
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, the fucking... The ARVN in South Vietnam, like, till the very end, had divisions in the field. Like, you see, like, they... It's armies do not actually collapse. Like, they are bureaucratic structures that are designed to take hits and...
Yeah. No, I think that's totally right. And it's not... We're not... The fighting will not stop until there's some kind of political settlement, whatever that ends up looking like. That's definitely true. And yeah, but all the more reason, frankly, to pursue this... Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it makes everybody like. You're not wrong that these platoons are essentially just falling back, but they're not. I don't know. I think they're losing essentially. Whether even if they're not going to, like, the army itself isn't going to dissolve, obviously, its ability to maintain coherent resistance to the advance, I think that's going to be severely degraded and compromised. I think we're already seeing it. Yes, it's not okay. There's, you know, at a certain level, three guys in two buildings can exert a disproportionate. But like,
so I don't think they're running out of men. Are they running out of men? Set like there's police forces. There's the guys running the press gangs. There's the guys they're grabbing. There's border guards. A state has people. Like, there's the Russian propaganda push is there, like, good Ukrainians and bad Ukrainians. And bad Ukrainians are the ones who are, like, fighting on the front line, and they speak Russian, and they're poor, and good Ukrainians have a nice apartment in Kiev, and they have an office job. There's a lot of good Ukrainians. Like, there's people who aren't affected by the fighting yet. There's manpower reserve.
Well, they had that great ad. Russians put out a great piece of propaganda of showing, like, basically, you know, fortunate son in Kiev partying it up and getting blowjobs from hookers, while poor Mikola from wherever the little village gets his nuts blown off, right? And fighting for what? And, like, yeah, that's great. It, like, all great propaganda, it works because it's true. But the thing is, again, this speaks to the kind of political, what we were saying before, as far as the political angle to the military operations, which, yeah, I don't think they're already only functional as a state because the United States is just giving them money. Like, the Ukrainian quote-unquote economy is just dollars being injected.
Stalker 2.
Sorry?
Stalker 2, big return. They're hoping for big returns.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah, right. Yeah, that would be the first, like, yeah.
Foreign currency.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That wasn't just Uncle Sam just here, take these dollar bills. So, yeah, I just, and even that's actually already kind of not work. I mean, they're keeping it loosely together, but it's even that is unsustainable, to say nothing of the unsustainability of the American financial position generally. So I just have a hard time believing that, like, while yes, you're right that in theory they could draw. I mean, yeah, it is physically possible for the Ukrainian state to muster 500,000 additional warm bodies tomorrow, in theory. Like, that's a thing that could, but that would actually hasten the end of the war more than not having those 500,000 guys. Like, at this point, it's a question. I'm actually really curious. I mean, it's not, you know, how this ends is going to be derivative of how long it takes, in part. And it's it's not clear to me what the strategy even is at this point. I mean, J.D. Vance, whatever else you want to say about him, and yes, he's a coon with a Pajit wife, okay, brown children, but he had a piece in the New York Times pointing out, like,
does he get to publish piece in the New York Times?
Because he has a Pajit wife. Okay.
I thought he was a MAGA guy. A real MAGA type guy.
yeah, what do you mean? He has a Pajit wife, as I said.
Dissident J.D. Vance.
So he was like, oh, this is stupid, and the Ukrainians, even if we gave them all this shit, which we shouldn't, it's not going to make a difference. And he's right. And there are people saying that. And there is no counter argument. I mean, or I don't know. I mean, there's, I guess there's a counter. If you're like a retarded NAFO Doge on Twitter, like, you know, you got the Shiba avatar and a rainbow flag. Sure. Like, I can see how you'd be just like, you were incapable of breathing through your nose or understanding that, that this is just fucking, this is not going to work. If you're the State Department, that's like, it's harder for me to believe.
Well, do you think the Americans could have a plan, which is like, we're going to impose costs, right? We're in the impose. We're in the impose cost.
Well,
phase
the best well, the best
things we send
the explanation that I've seen of American behavior that makes the most sense to me is they don't give a shit about Ukraine. They know the war is lost. They're just like, how do we stick it to Putin?
Yeah, so you're imposing costs. Like, yeah, to like, avoid this in the future, we need to impose costs now.
I don't even know if it's to avoid it in the future. I mean, it could be, but I don't even know if it's... I think it may just be like...
They legitimately think, like, the Balkans are next. The Baltics are next. That's a legitimate... Like, Estonia is next. It's not. But
yeah,
like,
but...
The cost-benefit of, like, taking Estonia...
He wants to make it seem like... Yeah, sure. Okay, I guess you could sort of squint and see that. What I don't see at all is the Ukrainian plan, because I think the move that they made, which was never going to work, and or maybe you were actually, as I recall, a little more kind of...
It's possible that...
Could have worked.
Which one? The 2020...
Wait for European and American industrial capacity
to
ramp up.
That's still the plan, is that they, by 2025, we will have a million shells a year being produced by the Americans or whatever, and then...
It's just not... Well, part of J.D. Vance's thing was like, that's not going to happen. Even next year, that's not going to happen. Even it's like, there's no way that it could be the plan for that to happen. Like the upside scenario is they get 3 or 4 million shells where they need 7.
Like, yeah, but that's like they've been doing it with 1.
But they're not doing it. They're losing. They're losing everywhere, and the pace of loss is accelerating. Like I really see. Maybe this is.
It's okay for me. It's like the medical thing with absolute relative risk, right? Like I've halved your heart disease risk, right? It was like very small.
Yeah, it was starting, but it's halved. Yeah,
yeah. Like
I get
the rate of increase is not the rate of increase has tripled. It has tripled of the absolute risk.
In my mind, this has gone from like so. I think about this. I think about this war on like 3 scales. I think of it on combat mission scale. I think of it on Flashpoint campaign scale. And I think of it on Hearts of Iron scale, or Unity of Command scale and Hearts of Iron scale. I think of it in like buildings and companies. I think of it in like hex squares of a couple kilometers, and I think of it in like fronts occupying, huge, you know, areas.
Divisions,
not even bigger than
divisions not in fronts. Yeah.
Right. So what I think is happening, like in my mind, the change, and it could be wrong. But like over the past year or so, it's been like, it's been actually mostly combat mission. Like even in Bakhmut and Avdiivka, it's been like individual companies doing, you know, block by block clearing of urban areas and yes, this kind of farmhouse thing that we still see. But there wasn't really much. The aggregated effect of all of those actions was quite small, so that you didn't even really get any kind of relevance on a hex map, you know, each hex is a couple square kilometers type thing. That was just not a particularly relevant scale. What we for the capture of Ocheretino, I believe is the name of this town. Town may even be overselling it.
Named house.
Right. Is like that. Now, the interesting thing to me is the unit that took the town advanced in a straight line down the highway. Like,
you know. Classic Russian secret maneuver.
Sorry?
The classic Russian secret maneuver.
Well, you pointed out early on how action has been. Like for in general, like there's not you're not seeing armor storming across the planes, right? Everybody's
interesting company.
Yeah, you're seeing
armor companies.
But what the thing is, what you have seen is trenches in fields. You've seen a lot. It's been very difficult for the Ukrainians to part of the difficulty of the Russian advance, I should say, has been like Ukrainians setting up trench systems at every tree line, at every field, between these little shithole towns. The fact that the Russian unit was able to advance essentially, like in theory on the map, you know, like it creates a massive salient. It creates like it's a needle, right? Like
it's an arrow.
It's a literal arrow. I mean, arrows of the sort that we haven't, you know, people have been making jokes about big arrow moves since the summer of 22. But this is your first real arrow we've seen since then, or maybe ever, because you didn't really even get those arrows at that time. They advance straight down the highway in a way that, like, now clearly they know. I mean, unless it could just be a classic blunder, the kind of shit you do when you know in your tutorial mission where you just like get outside your supply line and you're immediately cut off. I don't think they have the unit to cut them off. I think there are Russian units stacked not only in that town but all along that highway and then all the way down the rest of that sector. There's not enough Ukrainians. Probably no Ukrainians.
So I know this Sam Arrow. I've also, you know,
we've seen it now. Yeah.
It's like a kilometer long.
Sure, but we haven't seen Russians getting ahead, Russian units getting ahead of their, potentially even getting ahead of their supply in that kind of a way. I can't remember the last time I saw that.
Well, yeah, but also it's a kilometer. You're not like everyone's supply line is at a kilometer. It's like,
well, if the Ukrainian FPV and artillery capability is so hot, such hot shit, like, you know.
Yeah, but they eat those losses whether you're a kilometer up front or a kilometer behind.
I get what you're saying. But like, to me, the overall picture that emerges here is I'm seeing like the number counter in the Hearts of Iron, because the front can be static for a while. You can chew through men and material, and as long as that rate of consumption is more or less static on both sides, even if there's a slight imbalance, you know, you reinforce here, you go there, like that line can like wiggle a little bit, but it's pretty stable. I think we're at the point where that manpower counter in the top right corner of your UI for Ukraine is just like that ticker is going down too fast. It's going down faster and faster, and they're very quickly going to have to make, you know, what was the euphemism when the Russians withdrew from Kherson? Very difficult decisions. They're going to have to make very difficult decisions about. I think it's going to come down to a question of, do they want to defend Kharkov or do they want to defend Zaporozhye? And, you know, we'll see. But that's my take on it.
Yeah. I just don't see the Russians like this vast reserves bit. Like, they've had vast reserves. They've got the reserve of Rostov-on-Don is like allegedly what? Like, I've seen it, the people say as high as like 100,000.
I've seen about 100,000. Yeah.
Or 150.
In Rostov specifically. But they have, I mean, they've been.
And they have been like, what, 40 or 55 in Crimea? And like, the numbers that get thrown around for these like vast reserves just haven't, like, they've been there since for a year now. Like,
well, they've been accumulating.
Yeah, but that's not like a.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. We don't see evidence of giant formations near the Ukrainian border at this time.
Yeah, and like in the U.S. and like the media would be screaming bloody murder about that. Like, there's no reason that.
Maybe. Yeah. If. I don't know, maybe. Yeah, probably, I guess. I don't know that it would serve their interest to do that necessarily. I mean, maybe. I mean, it's a question of like, I guess their incentives immediately change as soon as they actually pass the bill through Congress. Because before they've been screaming bloody murder increasingly loudly for a couple months, and now it's like, yeah, we're going to get them. But I just don't see how it's possible. That's what I was getting to go back. Like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? United States is not going to be making 2 million shells in 2025. It's just not. Like, they can't even, what did you see this? Like, presumably it's Secret Services on both sides playing hanky. Ammo factories in going up, there was in Scranton and also in the UK, in Wales, I think. BAE Systems had their ammo factory. I think one or two, and that was, so either 50 or 100% of their production just halted for however long, and we'll see. But yeah, and that's before you factor in, like, just, yeah, I mean, the competency crisis is real, and the overall conditions are, I don't think the United States has the internal political, economic, industrial capability to do that, to output the amount of physical objects that Ukraine need, the amount and type of physical objects that Ukraine needs to like even continue slowing down, to keep the pace as it is rather than accelerate. I don't think the United States can output that many physical objects that quickly. I mean, they're never going to be, like, unless if we took power like tomorrow, then we could, in theory, like, we would, you know, do the needful and establish what was necessary.
Well, you don't think the slush fund will just allocate, like, enough money to get any, like,
but it's money. Like, you can't,
but, like, you know, the thing, it's internal to America, though. Like, in theory, you can do anything with money in America, right? Like,
no, that's what I'm saying. You can't, like, not, no, that's not in money. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not like a, I'm not an economist. I'm not exactly an MMT guy, but as I understand MMT, like, that's the whole thing. Like, the whole point of MMT is dollars are infinite. Dollars or whatever. Like, the constraint on dollar, the constraint is the physical constraint. The fiscal constraint, the monetary constraint, is something else. Like, these things are related, but in kind of, you know, essentially ad hoc. Because, like, you can't. That's what I'm saying. Yes, the United States can print all the dollars it wants. It cannot. You in a very literal sense, you can't. Like, the question is, how do you turn dollars into artillery shells? And the answer is a very long and complicated industrial process the United States can't manage. Like, where are you going to buy them from? Like, how does that, like, you can't just, the solution, like, what would work is if you had, like, some kind of magic spell. You had, like, a big pile of dollar bills, and you said abracadabra, and you got however many artillery shells. But that's just not how it works.
I agree. Like, I have my issues with American industrialism, but there is, like, over a long, it's not that, like, it's impossible. It's that it's a time issue, right? Like
these. I think it's structurally impossible. Widgets, the United States as currently, like, you would need a fascist revolution or some kind of, like, this system, this current regime is in. Yeah. Like,
my view is more optimistic, incapable. In that artillery shells are made of widgets. And you need to create, like, sub-widgets. They're widgets, and you need to make a certain amount of sub-widgets. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Over 2 years, you can work the kinks out of making your sub-widget factories enough that you can double or triple. Like, and then it gets easier as you scale it, right? Like, it's still an industrial,
I mean,
process.
I guess, in theory, they could set ideology to the side and just be like, look, this is existential, so we're not doing, like, minority-owned business subcontracting for the sub-widgets. It's competent white men all the way down. Assuming, you know, yeah. I mean,
like,
I
guess, if you took three different companies and each gave them all the contract, and, hey, here's like $1 billion.
They already do that. What do you mean? Like that's what they are. What do you mean? Or maybe I'm not understanding. See, like, that's Raytheon, Boeing, and
yeah. But, like, you know, that's just
Honeywell, right? I mean, those are, like,
if you're just slush funding it, which it seems like they're doing, like, you could give each of these companies $1 billion. Say, hey, make your you have $1 billion to make a factory.
I don't think 3M could do it. I don't think anybody could do it. I don't think you don't have, like, that's what I'm saying. Okay, yes. If you say, like, I want, what they're asking to create is a scalable, essentially just about infinitely scalable, or at least scalable for arbitrarily large quantities production line that is capable of, yes, you know, rising and falling to meet demand, mostly rising to meet the demands of and the requirements of the Ukrainian army. I just don't see it. Yes, Honeywell is very, and all these companies, Raytheon, they're very good at making niche, expensive product, and they're capable when it comes to mass production generally. But we're not talking about, like, just we're not talking about making TVs. Like, we're not talking about making, you know, TVs for a consumer market for just-in-time delivery at, you know, every Walmart and Best Buy in the country in for a given Black Friday. You're talking about, like, millions of shells on an ongoing basis. You're talking about just why you can't you can't fake that. You can't I just don't think it's a problem they can solve. I could be wrong.
It's how many subways do you think there are, right? Like the fuses are good. That's one thing they've talked about. The fuses were good on fuses. Like, the fuses are not the issue.
They have, what is it? Like, what do they, I don't even know how they're making explosives. Didn't the only black powder factory in the country?
That's all the issue. That was like the only one that had, like, it was like certain certs.
What, okay, sure. Cert out, yeah. I guess, but yeah, but that's like one factor being one in a, that's what I'm saying. Have you seen these pictures out of China? Like, I mean, factories, we're talking about widgets. These are factories for like TVs. But it's all automated. It's everything's in, like, essentially a clean room. It's, you know, boom, boom, boom. Every stage of the process is automated. The British Challenger factory looked like some dude's garage, and it's exact same situation. It doesn't look any different at the Raytheon factory than it does at the British Challenger factory. It doesn't look like these industrial accidents wouldn't happen if. Yeah, assuming it wasn't sabotage, but even if it was, it doesn't really, like, you wouldn't get these kinds of situations in these automated Chinese plants, and the Chinese are capable of, you know, because they built up that capacity and never, you know, never lost it and then improved on it. There's no, like, you would have to redesign the American industrial system. You would have not, yes, in terms of personnel, that's what I've been focusing on, but also in terms of physical plant. Like, American factories are not, like, they're holdovers from the 70s. They're not.
That's what I was thinking about this. I was kind of working in my head. Like, if I was in charge, right? How would I, if I needed to create a bunch of shells fucking fast? The move would actually, in my opinion, be to, like, not make modern factories. It would be make World War I factories, like, super high manpower demand.
Sure.
And then put the bill.
That would you know, that would help your economic situation. There would be all sorts. And yeah. Then you could build up, you know, robot automated factories in the meantime. Keep people employed.
But
I'm surprised
no one wants to, like, I'm surprised it hasn't been proposed yet. Cause it's like Poland or some shit. Like, you're like one of these countries that's not, you know.
They wouldn't even have the same kind of labor costs you get.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. Cause I could see why, like, well, okay, you need $1 billion slush fund for that, right? But you don't really need, like, like, the fact that there's not the Poles or the Slovaks aren't, like, well, they're just kind of volunteering. One of those things that, like, it does seem like the West is, like, collectively half-assing it, you know?
The Ukrainians aren't wrong about that, ultimately, that this is sort of a worst of both. It's, yeah. Like, not, it's enough to cause a lot of problems for Russia and Ukraine, but not enough to actually really substantially do anything. So it's... Yeah, it's they're not wrong when they say that is, yeah, essentially it's being half-assed. What I really think is going on is, like, in a sense, this was all, like, it goes back to the respective theories of the war. Like, Russia's theory of the war was that this isn't a war. These are, you know, our retarded cousins, our, you know, fucking farmer idiots are being really stupid, so I'm gonna go send a couple tank brigades into the little, you know, capital. Oh, look how cute. And they're gonna surrender and we're just gonna work things out. And they just total miscalculation and along, you know, just in all sorts of ways. I think equally a miscalculation and far more disastrous is the United States' theory of the war, which is Russia is a, what do they call it, a gas station with nuclear weapons. It's a backwater shithole full of, you know...
all they make is food and steel and petroleum. Nothing useful. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. They don't make dildos. Yeah. They don't make
financial service, financial instruments.
Yeah, they just can't.
He just couldn't bundle a bond package if they lived. They were, you know,
right. Yeah, yeah, we look, I bet they don't even have mortgage backed securities in the Russian stock market.
I assure you they do, probably.
Well, no, no, I'm just saying, like, not me. Yeah, yeah, but, yeah, yeah. Well, that's how backward and yeah, they are, yeah. Right? So So we're just going to turn off. We're going to disconnect them from the global economy. We're going to issue these economic sanctions, and 6 to 12 months, their economy is going to collapse, and they're going to, Putler is going to be out on his ass.
It's the state collapse thing. It's like they're doing state collapse. And like, I want really want to do that Cuba episode, by the way. But
Oh yeah, we'll do it. We'll do
but
it.
But like, states don't collapse. Like Cuba, if the U.S. couldn't make Cuba collapse with sanctions, it just it's not happening.
Yeah, right. If the United States could not collapse with Cuba with sanctions, yeah, the idea that they were going to cause Russia to collapse with sanctions, just yeah,
and they also much stricter sanctions. Cuba has strict to this day. The sanctions making Cuba is like other companies that do business with like if you're a French company or whatever that has no France has no sanctions on Cuba, right? But if you do business with them, you can get like.
You get sanctioned. Yeah, you
can get through this, like, right. if they want to, and they usually do, like, if they're actually pretty aggressive, because there's just, like, these just retarded lobby that, like, is, like, still has a hard-on over that stuff.
Hey, man, we're conservative.
Yeah, the DeSantis base, if you will. Yeah. No, I just want to... I really question, though, the morality. The actual, like, moral authority of the U.S. is, like, already, you know, whatever. But, like... The Cuban embargo is probably the most, like, it's just openly hypocritical, like, actually doing damage to people's, like...
We're going to starve poor people for freedom.
Yeah. And, like, why? Like,
for freedom! Didn't you hear me?
Yeah, but, like...
They're not free, so we got to starve them. Duh!
Yeah, there's just so many, like demonstrably worse regimes than the Cuban regime. Like, they're like, a kind of okay government. Like,
as far as their own people's welfare is concerned.
Yeah, like, Cuba post... Whatever, 1975. Sure, there was early things at rough. There's been like, but there was like a famines and stuff. But like, not because like government mismanagement. It's a famine because like you know, it's a small island country and you've cut off trade again. Like
from
like,
the whole, I mean, for periods of time, for long periods, essentially the rest of the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to do an episode on Cuba at some point. Yeah. But so I just think the American theory of the war was at least as wrong and more disastrously wrong compared to the Russian theory of the war. Because at least the Russians could like recover. I don't see how the United States like there's just
what
no...
about the Afghanistan maneuver where you the America. So the idea was we make Ukraine into permanent gayop zone against Russia, right? What if Russia controls Ukraine and becomes still permanent gayop zone against Russia? Like
they're not. That's a Russian police. Like if the Russians are actually pretty good at internal security. Like they have all sorts of issues in all sorts of ways, but managing internal Russian domestic like terrorism type stuff is they're extremely good at that. And I don't think once they're. Once it's literally a police action, once it's literally like they're not fighting against the organized Ukrainian army, but they're managing whatever kind of gladio type shit. Like they may go on for some time, but they're just not. I don't see that having much success at all.
That was the plan A, by the way. Remember the first month of the war when it was like, "Oh, they're going to just rolling tanks."
Yeah.
Plan A was like send the Green Berets in. Yeah, Stinger missiles and shit. You know, like do the
Afghanistan the Wolverines. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some knucklehead Azov hanger on who like does the Imperial Japanese guy in the 70s in the desert island. What do you mean the war is over? Like, sure, but as far as like actually doing anything other than kind of just grotesque. Terrorist attacks on civilians. I don't think it's gonna amount to anything. So yeah, I don't know. I know one of our mutual friends was boldly predicting the war would end in the first 3 months of 2025. I think that's wildly over optimistic. That's just not really in the cards. Neither it's not gonna. Even if the Russian army moves on Kharkov tomorrow, and it's just not. It's gonna take longer than that. Even in the situation, I mean, just take no. They can hold out for at least another year. I think it's probably going to be closer to 2 years before we.
Well,
see.
Question is, once the four provinces or the four oblasts that they want are all under control, Do you start like some kind of peace talks, some kind of somethings, you know?
I mean,
the Ukrainians will not do peace talks where they give up land that they control, right?
No, yeah, that's unfortunately just become clear.
It's not the cards. We have to understand what their things are. They're not giving up land that, like,
they're not giving up land that they don't physically have, like, dudes on.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, well, once we've removed all the dudes from the four oblasts that were annexed by Russia, like, what does that look like? My hope, granted, it's kind of a cope, but it's all I got. I think the equation changed on the Russian side, if not necessarily with Putler himself, but maybe just with the kind of realities of the Russian position globally. Although also maybe with Putin, I don't know. But the Russian instinct, and certainly Putin's instinct, would be to do a demilitarization at that point and say, like, okay, yeah, you get to keep your state, you get to keep Kiev, and you know, you're just neutral. My thing is, I don't think that's going to, like, as sort of whatever, from, like, you know, your map painting autist, that's unsatisfying, but you can live with that. I don't think the Russians can live with, like, it would have to be regime change, permanent disarmament, and a permanent
Austria kind of stuff.
Like, yeah, like permanent
constitutional,
exactly, kind of stuff. And like and permanent Russian garrison and no other troops allowed kind of thing. And I don't think that's going to be tolerable. Like, if that's tolerable to the defeated parties, then you could see a peace deal at that juncture. But I don't think that's going to be tolerable to the United States, and I don't think it's going to be tolerable to Zelensky and the, you know, global Zionist powers. I just don't see them accepting that as a status quo. What they would accept, and what they're going to insist on, is Korea. They've been talking about it recently, and they're only going to talk about it more at that point. Is, you know, Korea style DMZ, frozen conflict along probably the Dnieper or something like that. Maybe this other river. Who knows? Russia will not accept that. Russia would have accepted that against their interests before the Crocus terrorist attack. They will not accept that in the aftermath. They're simply not going to accept any Ukrainian regime that has even a residual capability to strike in any way against Russia. They're just not going to accept it. So that's an impasse, and I think that's going to prevent any kind of peace deal.
Yeah, so what is the end of that?
Yeah, a good question. That's what I'm saying. Good question. I think that question, they might accept it with the Russian army at the gates of Kiev.
It's Lviv Oblast, independent Rump State, and then annexation of the whole rest of the thing in three to five years.
I think you could see Novorossiya, like, landlocked Ukraine, including Kiev. Again, my map painting brain hates it, but it's. If you could see something like an intact, though severely diminished and landlocked, Ukrainian state with permanent constitutional neutrality and a permanent Russian garrison is a possible end state. The only other possibility I see would be, like, total annexation of everything except for maybe Lviv, which would go to Poland, and maybe, like, little chunks. And
Transnistria going Hungary.
Exactly, yeah, stuff like that.
Or the Romanian parts goes to...
Exactly. Which is, like, frankly... The Romanians and Hungarians are low key okay with that. Like, they're actually, like, they're still very mad about, like, the treaty. Like, the Hungarians still talk about the Treaty of Trianon, and, like, it's, they're like, and the Ukrainian mistreatment of Romanian, Hungarian, and other white people, European minorities, in Ukrainian territory was, like, an ongoing diplomatic point of contention. And so, yeah, Romania and Hungary are totally on board. Poland's obviously totally on board. That's
Belarus's red line, actually.
Oh yeah, they don't want that to happen for Poland. That's right. Yeah. So that's something that Russia's going to have to deal with for sure. But and that maybe also, like, at a certain level provides, like, although you will now, the one exception to what I was saying earlier about Gladio is Lviv. You will see severe gayops in a Russian
hand. The Russians don't want it.
I don't think they want it at all. No. Yeah. I think the smart thing to do that like my map painting brain, you know, makes it happy is Carpathian Mountains. Just draw the border at the Carpathian Mountains, which seeds Lviv, which they're on the other side, and a little bit more and just draw the line there and call it a day. That's
then you deport the Kievans who
yeah
pro regime, and you do India stuff, you know, Hindustan stuff where you
exactly population movement like you haven't seen since, which is not even really, you know, because like Lausanne, you know,
and buses at that point,
so right?
It's not like you're.
But yeah, I think that's the most long-term stable equilibrium. Doesn't mean that's what's going to happen, obviously, but that's sort of the general convergence. Certainly what I would like to see, and I think given the conditions that we're actually dealing, it would be great if Zog could just take...
It solves the Transnistria problem, too.
Exactly. But yeah, if Zog could just take a fucking L, none of this would be necessary. Like, if they could just... Like, if Israel could just take the fucking L... all these people wouldn't have to die, would be maimed, have their nuts blown off. Like, none of that would be needed to happen. You'd just be like, yeah, we got a little big, too big for our britches. We fucked up. Sorry. You know, yes, we are part of the Russian cultural sphere, historical sphere. You know, Kiev and Moscow are sister cities, and we promise never to do it again. And, you know, kick the Jews out, kick NATO to the curb. And just be fucking normal. You know, like that wouldn't be that hard, but we live in clown world and we don't get to have nice things.
Okay. I think it's supposed to end it for the
Yeah, that's probably a good place to wrap it up. Thank you all for listening. Stay safe and take care, everybody.